Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of August 26th. I'm John Gibson, and on a Saturday night with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, what's up with this Saturday night stuff, John? I mean, we're Sundays.
I know, I apologize to you and to the listeners. We're not going to be able to get these weekend games in, but I have an appointment early on Monday morning, and I can't... I'm not going to be able to sit around and edit the show and do all that stuff and stay up all night this week, so apologies, but we'll be back on Sunday night next week.
Sure, okay. All right, I appreciate your dilemma. We all have dilemmas.
Yeah, well, life gets in the way of baseball sometimes.
It does indeed. Doggone it. I know. What's up with that? But anyway,
sometimes it's the other way around.
Yeah, I know. This is what we expect. And it's like, kind of like baseball is kind of like marriage. You know, you expect it to be perfect, and sometimes it's not.
And you're angry about it.
I know.
You're frustrated.
Indeed.
You're throwing things.
Indeed.
You're yelling. Yeah, you're right. Baseball, like marriage. You just want to take a bat and hit it.
Yeah, indeed. Sometimes, you know, the purpose pitches are called for, but... Oh my! I think that's a dark place we're not going. But anyway, how are you doing, John?
If you keep on that train, you're going to strike out.
I'm doing well. Indeed.
I'm doing well. Except for this little cough, I can't get to go away. But I'm doing well.
Okay.
We had a lot of great action today, and the races are tight, and so are some of the players, it seems. But on this week's show, we've got a chat with Mike Bolsinger of Lotte. We're going to talk about the Marines. We're going to look at the league races, talk about some fantastic individual achievements, and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, recently I spoke with Mike Bolsinger of the Lotte Marines, and we spoke a fair amount last year. I think we only had him on the show one time, but I wanted to get back to him because he just had this fantastic season. He went 13-2, and it seemed like he had a 3.06 ERA, but it seemed like he won a lot of games. He won all the games when he allowed 5 runs in a game. Yeah, because he won like 10 to 5, 12 to 5, 9 to 5. He had a lot of those.
9 to 5.
Indeed. And you got to have Dolly Parton doing the melody for that one. Okay.
There you
go. So, and one.
Wake up, millennials. It's Dolly Parton, for goodness sakes. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, John. John, take a chill pill.
They're all like grabbing their phones and looking at Google and all this stuff. Just Dolly Parton, for goodness sakes.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Right. Okay. So this year he's been missing in action a little bit, but he just returned to the first team about 2 weeks ago, and he's 4-4 this season. He went from having a 3.06 ERA last year to a 4.45 ERA this year, largely because he's given up more home runs this year.
Lagoon, but it's not all the Lagoon's fault.
Blue Lagoon. Yeah. And so he allowed 7 home runs last year in 117 and 2/3 innings, and this year it's up to 14-85. He's walked a few more guys too, but pretty much everything else is holding steady. So I think it's the extra few walks and the home runs at 230% as often as they happened last year is really the key there. So, anyway, it's been a long time since I had a chance to talk to him, and so it was really nice catching up, and I guess you'll hear a lot of that. We had a good time. He's a pleasant guy and always very forthcoming. You know, he's one of those guys you really only need to ask one question. You know, it's like, how you doing? How you doing, Mike? And then after that, you know, he just does the interview. He just tells you everything of importance that he can think about and does it succinctly and says it well. So if I'm smarter next time, I'll just, I'll say, you want to do an interview? And as soon as he says yes, I just flick on the recorder and I'm done. So I'll have to try that one
Right,
next time.
yeah, that's not your style. You have to have an out-of-body experience to have that happen.
To be inhabited by my body will have to be taken over by a reporter or something instead of a monologuist,
A
a soliloquist.
monologist.
Okay. All right, well, one can dream. So anyway, this is the chat we had, and I hope you enjoy.
Okay, so our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Mike Bolsinger of the Chiba Lotte Marines. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time. We kept missing you last year and this year. And, I wanted to talk to you when you were Player of the Month last year. Pitcher
yeah,
of the
yes,
Month.
Yes, yes, yes. It's been a while.
I think it was your dad got on me for something I tweeted.
Oh, who knows? But he's on Twitter a lot, so I try and stay away from Twitter. So.
Yeah, so what happened was is that Ishikawa, you had all the wins. I think you had 5 wins that month in May?
Honestly, it's been a while since I've had a win, so I don't remember.
Don't remember what it was like. I know that feeling. But you actually go out on the field. I just sit here and look and talk, so it's a lot easier for me to imagine I have wins. So Ishikawa had a really good month, and he just didn't have the wins, and you won the award. And I wanted to ask you about that, but I didn't see. It's like it was one of the times when you were. It's just we were not in the same place at the same time. You weren't at Seibu, you weren't in Chiba.
Yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, it's been a long time. Like I said, since you had that really big month last year, and what goes through your mind when you're pitching okay and things aren't working, or you're not pitching okay and things are working?
Obviously, last year it was, from pitch number one in the season, just. The stuff was working. It was more of, I remember being in spring training and being like, man, I don't know if this is going to be a good year or not. Because in spring training, it was, I didn't have any of my pitches. I wasn't pitching very well last year. And then, even throwing in the bullpen before my first start, I really didn't know how the game was going to go. And then I threw the first pitch and everything kind of just clicked. This year, it's been a little different. It's been more of a battle for sure. Just a little bit inconsistent. Been dealing with a foot problem that's been just annoying since day one, since I got here in April. But, I think stuff like this, you kind of find out what kind of pitcher you really are through the struggles and stuff like that. So, I'm proud of myself. There's been situations I can remember where I've gotten out of it and it could have been a lot worse. So, for me, that's just as good as a win.
Okay, well, last year you had a situation where you had a bunch of games. They seemed like they scored 10 runs every time you pitched. And how much does that help you get your confidence or get your feel for the everything when you feel like they're just going to score every time you play? Does it matter at all?
I think it matters. In saying that, last year it was just honestly, if they scored one run, I felt that good to where I knew I can go out there and win. But in multiple games, it was, when we were came at the bat, the first at bat, we're scoring 5 runs. And for me, that's just like, well, now I can actually go up here and pitch relaxed. You really don't have to try and hit your spots as well. It's more of, you just go out there and pitch.
Right.
And there's a sense of ease when you're out there and you have a, 5-run lead when you're a pitcher. You can ask any pitcher. It's way better to pitch when you have a big lead like that. Rather than being a close game.
Okay, so it kind of like I can just focus on my execution. Okay, just throw the pitch as well as I can. What happens, happens.
Exactly. Yes. And that's huge for a pitcher, what I think. So it's, and it also helps when your stuff's not good and you have a big lead like
right.
that. There's been a few games this year where we've had a pretty big lead early in the game, and I've been pitching. And it definitely kind of builds your confidence up because you can go out there, if you give up a run or two, you guys are still winning, you're in the ball game. So it helps in both ways.
Okay, now this season has been, you guys were fifth last year, and it's like everywhere, everybody pretty much second to sixth is in the pennant race.
Yeah, it's, I remember, I just looked at it last night, it's like, man, everyone is within 2-3 games of each other. So, it's really going to come down to September who's going to have that you know, a better part of this last month and a better September, and it's, you know, you really don't know. And once you get the playoffs, whoever's in the playoff, I think it's just anyone's game, whoever's really hot at that time.
Now, I've different people tell me different things about how Japan affected them as baseball players. I mean, for example, I think of one guy who said that coming to Japan allowed him to make all the adjustments that he was unable to make from AAA to the majors.
Mm-hmm.
Because balls, you know, everything's different there. Ball's different, the role may be different, the expectations are much higher. And then here he comes, he's getting the same expectations, but he's using the same ball. He knows if he does well, he's going to stick.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing in pressure situations. So what are some of the things that changed you or maybe allowed you to make some of the adjustments that you might not have been able to make in the States?
You know, for me, it was never worrying about if I was going to stay up here right. or get sent down. That never really crossed my mind. Okay. It was more of I'm actually having fun playing baseball again because mm-hmm. it had been, you know, the last time I can remember in the States having fun was back when I was with the Dodgers in 15.
Okay.
And it was a really great year. But
John will be happy to hear that.
Yeah. But, you know, last year I had so much fun, and it was such a refresh. And even though this year's been a little bit tough, I'm still having fun.
Mm.
It's just you learn a lot about yourself as a pitcher, and I always think, you know, if I went back home to the States and I pitched in the big leagues, I really do honestly think I'd probably be better and execute a lot better. Because out here, it's just their mentality as hitters. I mean, I think I've given up a few base hits where the ball's hit the ground and they get a base hit from it. Mm. It's just the mentality is don't strike out.
Right.
So you have to make sure that your pitches and your pitch selection and your execution is really kind of pinpoint on, whereas, you know, when you go back home, and it's not everyone, but you either get that guy that wants to hit the home run or he's going to strike out.
Right.
You know, as of right now, strikeouts are up and home runs are up.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, here it's, you know, you're getting it everywhere, every different direction. So, to me, it makes you a lot better pitcher, and I feel like I've gotten a lot better. Even though, like I said, the year's been not as good as I wanted to, I still feel like I'm getting better, and I'm, you know, it's all about acclimating. I'm learning new stuff. I've learned stuff from last year that I've made adjustments to this year.
Okay. Working with them. Can you give me an example?
You know, a big thing I learned last year was tipping pitches.
Okay.
They're huge on that out here. So I've had to come up with a way. You know, when it started at the beginning of the season, I felt like I was tipping my pitches, and I've really worked on ways to hide the ball, you know, ways to have the same type of, you know, coming set in my motion, which, you know, from around All-Star break till now has really helped me a lot. And you know, it's an adjustment period. You know, I've been playing baseball for a long time, but I've only been playing baseball in Japan for 2 years now, which is, it's a lot new. So for me, I love the input that the coaches give me. You know, I guess you could easily say, you know, I've been in the big leagues, I know how to pitch, but for me, I love the communication. These guys have played out here and been doing this a lot longer than I have. So any input that I get from any sort of pitching coach out here, I take with fullness and I just soak it all in.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you mentioned that, because Masato Yoshi, your pitching coach, is a guy who, when he came back from the States, he had to make a lot of adjustments to Japanese ball. He like the balk rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the umpire said, yeah, what they do in spring, you know. Oh, yeah, fine. First game of the season, balk. You told me it was fine in spring training. Oh, just ignore that stuff, you know.
That was something that I ran into last year. In spring training, I think I balked 4 times, and I was like, man.
That's a lot for
spring. I haven't balked since I was 12 years old, the last time I remember. But
hey,
yeah, it's totally different.
Usually they wait till the first game of the season to tag in.
Man, they were tagging me in spring training last year. But
no, you lucked out.
It's a ton of an adjustment. And especially when you get a pitching coach who's pitched both in the States and here, you know, there's a lot more knowledge that you can get from someone like that, because he kind of knows the difference and he kind of knows the adjustments that you have to make. You know, like I said, I've only been here for 1 year. This is my second year. There's still so many adjustments. And, you know, ways that I can get so much better throughout my career here, I think. You know, I hope to have a long-lasting career here. You know, to me, going back home hasn't really crossed my mind, just because, like I said last year, I have so much fun out here. It's hard to want to go back to where baseball might be a little bit more political.
Yeah.
In a way, I don't like dealing with that stuff. I like to just go out here. You know, every time I've pitched, I've been told, here's the ball, here's when you're going to pitch, and after I'm done pitching, hey, here's when you're going to pitch the three next times. Now, back in the States, it was, you know, you get done with your start, we don't know when you're going to pitch, we'll let you know, it might not be there, you might go to minors.
Kershaw treatment now.
Yeah, you know, it's...
You're treated like you're an important part of the team.
Yeah, and when you feel like that, you know, it makes you feel better as a person, it makes you feel better as a baseball player, and it makes you feel like you're being treated right and yeah. They really care about
you. There's something to be said for that, I think, for all of us. Okay, well, I'm going to not keep you too long. I want to thank you so much for joining us again, and look forward to having you on the show next time.
Yeah, whenever we catch each other.
Well, John, and thank you, Mike, and thank you for making John happy for saying that... last year was the most fun he's had since he played with the Dodgers.
In 2015, yeah, I remember that season.
Okay.
I remember it well.
So what else do you remember besides the 2015 Dodgers?
Well, I mean, I still have not gotten to say hello to Mike.
You're kidding me.
Marines a couple of times, but I have not met him yet. Yeah,
he plays, he's good at hide and seek, I think, what it was. You know, last year... I went out to talk to him three times, once at Cebu and twice at Chiba, and he was never there. One time at Chiba, we spoke, and then he said, okay, I'm going to go hit the weight room for about 20 minutes, and I'll be back. And
oh, that was the time he had an injury.
Yeah, well, he said, I asked him about it. He said he didn't remember, but when I got to I don't know if it was an injury or it was just fatigue or something, but... he was concerned about some sort of discomfort, and they took him to the hospital, because when I got to the office, I read that he was deactivated with some discomfort, and I don't think it was a long-term thing.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, so anything that sticks in your mind about that?
Yeah, it was a great chat. I liked the questions this week, and I liked Mike's tone throughout the chat. It's just like when Johnny Barbato said last week at the end of his interview that and that was one of those little backdoor sliders that he snuck in there real quick, saying he really loved it here in Japan and wants to stay. And you get that Chiba vibe from Mike Bolsinger, I think. He just sounds very California in the way he talks about his love for the team and the love for the situation and the fans and the whole experience. And so I guess I just like the overall tone most of all, but... we're talking about a guy whose ERA this season is over 4.5, and his record, he did win. He was fabulous on Friday night.
Yep.
In a 3-0 win over SoftBank, 7 innings, no runs allowed, obviously. And, you know, he won 13 games last year, so what is he, over these two seasons, if you put them together?
17 and 6,
correct. But, I mean, you look at the season this year and look at what he did last year, and I would think, okay, you're thinking, or at least the fans are thinking, well, he's underperforming, he's not, you know, he's not the guy he was last year. And then you hear him talk about an injury, a foot thing.
Yep.
And you just have to assume... with the, you know, the times that he has been deactivated and the time that he has missed, that, you know, it's more than just a thing. But you know, I listening to him, you just hear how happy he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what came through. Now, you know, he said something that I wish he would have expounded on a little bit more, in that, you know, it can be a little bit political back home.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the States when you're playing baseball. And I wanted to know his version of that, because I've heard players talk about this before, and it's just the notion. I mean, some of it can be, for example, certain scouts get you signed by a team, and then they're tight with certain coaches on the team.
Hmm.
And those coaches, those scouts ask to give you more opportunities, and so those coaches push the manager to play you in certain situations more, especially when you're coming up. And so I'm thinking at the big league level, not in the minor leagues. Obviously, you're trying to develop players, so it's different there. But when you're trying to win at the big league level, it gets a little bit different. So when he said that MPB isn't as political, I thought, well, you know, I guess so. But I really wanted to know exactly what he meant, because I've seen this. I've heard players tell me, look, you know, this coach signed another player, or he was pushing for the team to sign another player, and he gives that player all the really good opportunities. And so his numbers look better because he comes up with runners on base, and all he has to do is make contact, and maybe he can get an RBI, whereas I come up with, you know, the base is empty. And, you know, there are certain situations where they can't pick up those numbers, even if they produce, or they're productive or successful. And so, yeah, I thought, you know, what is it about MPB that's not as political, and where did that come from, and how was that whole experience? And I mean, it's a quick 10 minutes. It's a 10-minute chat, and it goes by really fast. And obviously, I know you didn't have time to get into more detail about that, so hopefully we can do that if and when we talk to him again. And it seems like he's going to be here again next season. If he's injured and the team knows he's injured, and that's probably the reason that he has been slow, because he pitched really, really well on Friday, or at least he got the good results. And again, he's the kind of guy who, he doesn't really have fantastic stuff, and we'll get into this later when we talk about the Marines, but they have a lot of pitchers like that. Don't have fantastic stuff, but they get the outs, and they know how to pitch. And Mike said he's learning a lot, and he's still learning. He's so much better about implementing what he has learned since he has been here. And I just thought it was just a really fun chat, you know, from start to finish. I really enjoyed it.
I did too. It was fun, and I thought also the political bit was kind of interesting. And I think, of course, his example is that the opportunities are predictable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it just at face value, and what made me think is that something that Kyuji Fujikawa said the other day to me, which is, When he went to the majors, he was surprised. He was stunned to find, when he went to move from the Chicago Cubs to the Texas Rangers after he was released, he was stunned to find out that all major league teams and their front office are not identical.
Oh.
He said, I knew, of course, in Japan all the teams are different, but I just thought all them major league teams were just major league teams.
Right.
And so my comment about to Mike is exactly the same. He's played for Chiba. He's played for Chiba Lotte. In Japan, it's not political. Well, go to another team and let's see how that flies. But
yeah,
because
try being a Buffalo for a day.
I've had pitchers come up. I've had pitchers come up to me and ask me when they were gonna pitch.
Because they had no idea.
I mean, I'm not kidding you. This is, do you have a clue? And I can't say that it's the fighters always, but I mean, Hideki Kuriyama, who loves his research, used to love to make matchups with his starting pitchers. You know, he'd hold, you know, he'd have one guy start early, or another one push another one back 3 days so he could face a different team or play in a different park. And he'd love that. And then his starting pitchers, except for the best ones, his second tier starting pitchers really didn't have a clue when they were going to pitch. But I think for Tadahito Iguchi, in his pitching coach is Masato Yoshi, and he played in the majors as well. So I think between the two of them, they're going to give the pitchers a better and more reliable look,
right,
than some clubs would. So I think as to what political means, I've heard a variety of different explanations. I mean, I remember Boomer Wells essentially saying something to the effect that you did, whereas he was often in the majors, how many opportunities you get depend on how high you were drafted.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And
yeah,
how often, you know, how quickly you can get called up based on, you know, a given level of minor league results depends on how highly you're drafted. Greg Boomer Wells told me essentially that you know, he outperformed all these guys who were called up from AAA and failed with the Minnesota Twins.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, next thing he's on the, you know, he's on the boat to Japan.
Right. Okay. And we interviewed him on the show years ago, right. And I think he mentioned that.
So, okay. So anyway, that struck me, and I thought about the teams being different. The other thing that struck me was that, well, first of all, about the foot. Now, I thought, wow, if he's struggling at home, it may be bothering him at home, but it's mm-hmm. killing him on the road. And let's nice. Put it this way. His numbers are killing him on the road. And he's got a 3.69 ERA at home, and on the road, 5.74. Although it would be higher at home, but he's got a whole bunch of unearned runs. So actually, it's not good either way. But yeah, I think we talked last year about him enjoying the situation. And being in a situation, and you know, that's so important, that players are comfortable. Some players, I feel, it's hard for them to be comfortable anywhere. But he's not one of them. A couple of guys come to mind, you know, they just seem to be unhappy with every situation. But
I've seen those guys. Yep. Yeah, I've seen
okay.
those guys.
So, but Mike seemed to be very happy from day one. And this year, you know, the foot's bothering him, but he is not letting it get him down. He did say, you know, oddly enough, we spoke a bit about, because we spoke a bit about the mound, he said, you know, it's the new turf that's the problem. He doesn't like the new turf. I said, well, if you pitch there for another 6 years, you can wait till they change it or until it gets hard and worse. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to it. But
or you can just get used to it. Yeah, that too.
Exactly.
But, you know, I found when he started talking about, for example, when he was in the bullpen, he didn't feel like he said last year. First of all, he said last year felt good the whole season. Mm-hmm. But this year, you know, sometimes he'll feel good or bad in the bullpen, and then he'll get on the mound out there and things will feel better, or he just doesn't feel right, but he'll still get the results. And, you know, it brought me back to the times when I was really running and trying to get that sub-4 marathon time. So I was pushing myself, and I'd wake up in the mornings and I'd say, you know what, I really just don't even have it today. And I don't feel like running. I just feel tired, but I'm going to go out there and I'm going to run course, whatever. And if I get out there and I just don't have it, I'll come home. I'll just turn around and come home. And I'd get out there and I'd feel great.
Okay.
And so I just knew that it was a mental thing. It was a mental thing that I had to get over. And that I just made a promise to myself when I committed to doing distance running. I said, never let my mind tell my body what it can't do.
Mm.
Just go out and do it, and you know, let the body tell you what the results will be.
Mm.
And so when I heard him talking about that, it reminded me of those things with me. Like, you know, you think you're in the bullpen and you're just not, you know, you're trying to do this with the ball and make, you know, shape your pitches the way you want, and they're just not happening. But you can't give up. You got to go, you know, especially a starting pitcher. You can't say, well, look, hey, Skip, I just had, you know, I couldn't do anything in the bullpen, so you're going to have to start somebody else. It doesn't work that way.
I can start you on the flight back to America next week.
It just doesn't work that way. So, you know, you just got to go out and work with what you got on that day. Sometimes you have it, you know, and sometimes you don't. And sometimes you think you have it and the results are bad. So I just can't let those mental blocks stop you from going out and performing. Or just, you know, you have to find a way to work with what your body is doing on that particular day. And I always emphasize this. I've talked about it for years, but these guys are not machines. And although we expect them to be the same all the time, and we expect these results, and we expect them to win or to be really good every single time out, it doesn't happen that way.
Okay.
And so that just reminded me that part was really fun to listen to. All right. Well, let's transition and talk about the Marines now. So, my impression of them as we sit here on Saturday is that Daichi Suzuki, given what he has done for this team and his ability to produce when the team needs it, is the epitome of a guy I would choose as the MVP because he plays around the infield wherever you need, well, in part because he's not a great defender. But, you know, I know he's not a great defender, but he's a willing defender.
Sure.
You know, he is willing to try his best at any position wherever they put him, and he's out there fighting and scrapping. And then with the bat, he's just been genius with the bat. I just really love what he's
doing. Does the word Casey McGee kind of strike a parallel there?
Yes and no, but I mean, no in terms of the 2013 Casey McGee, I would say yes, but he didn't play a lot of different positions. But
no, I'm thinking.
But he was that valuable to the when he was playing a lot of second base,
right? Oh, we need to play second base. Okay.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking Suzuki, and he's just been so clutch. I just really love what he has been doing, and he's a guy who probably is not going to get.
No.
Any votes for MVP,
no.
But I certainly
not unless you can throw left-handed and pitch for Nippon Ham.
Well, he's not doing either one of those things, but he's had big hits, he's had clutch hits, he's hitting for average pretty well, he's hitting for power in times of need. He'll steal a base.
And
I mean, I absolutely love what he's done this season.
And having said that, this is a guy who a couple of guys who are Marines beat reporters told me when he came up, they couldn't move him from shortstop because he was A, the captain, and B, the shortstop. Of course, that was the former manager.
Yeah, he's hitting 300. The 14 home runs, it seems like every single one of them has been like very clutch. 28 doubles. I mean, I just love what he has been doing with the bat, so I wanted to state that clearly and emphatically. And then yeah, we talked to Zach Ikuma during the preseason, the PL preseason prediction show, and kudos to him. He said that the weakness would be starting pitching. Now, I said I expected some guys to come along and maybe take a step up, and they have not. But there have been guys such as Atsuki Taneshi, whom I briefly mentioned earlier this season, and then Daiki Iwashita, who've been pretty surprisingly useful for the Marines. And, you know, we've got the Hideaki Wakui problem. He's a problem unless he's hurt, which I know he went down with an injury and general ineffectiveness. So, you know, that has been a problem. But you've got guys like Kota Futaki, Tomohiro Sakai, guys who perhaps I thought would take a step forward, as well as Chihaya Sasaki. I thought he would be more of a presence this season, and those guys just have not been able to do the job on the mound, and I think that's the major reason why we look at, I mean, they're not out of the race. I think Lotte has as good a chance as anyone, blah, blah, blah. We've been talking about how tight the race is, but in reality, if they're not going to pitch better, which I don't see them doing, then they're not going to finish in the playoff picture. But, I mean, they're not eliminated. They're in fourth place as we speak now. They're only a game behind the Eagles. So anything can happen.
Well,
I don't expect good things.
I'm more positive about their starting pitching now than I was then. Because I think Futaki's issues are generally in just inconsistency, some bad decisions, you know, some bad luck. I think he's actually had a much better season than his numbers look like.
Really? I don't think so. I look at him when he pitches, and he's borderline hard enough thrower who he can control the strike zone a little bit with his hard stuff, but he's just so erratic. He's having trouble putting the ball where he needs to put
it. That's control.
Okay,
yeah.
whatever we want to talk about. If it's inability to throw it out of the strike zone when he's trying to go out of the strike zone, or pinpoint it when he's trying to brush the strike zone, whatever it is, he's not hitting his spots. And
well, I think he's been inconsistent in bad situations, and that's essentially he's had done poorly. He needs to sort of I think, calm down and realize that it's not going to be the end of the, you know, he just needs to execute his pitches, that it's not rocket science. I think he's putting too much pressure on himself when he gets runners in scoring position, because basically he's doing everything right. You know, he's striking out. He doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but he does. He strikes out more than any other Marines pitchers. He walks relatively fewer batters than the other Marines pitchers. He's throwing these fat pitches. My guess is he's given up, his home runs are probably more, have been more painful. They've been more costly than other Marines pitchers. But these are things like, I look at his pitches and I think, okay, this guy can actually pitch, which is one, does he have the pitches? I mean, there are guys who can survive forever with mediocre stuff, as long as they know what it is and what they can do with it, and they're really cunning. And
well, because they can hit their spots.
Right, exactly. Well, that is a requirement of that type, and he's not quite there. I mean, he's not the guy who needs to be there. But as you said, most of the Marines guys, their stuff is not great. I mean, most of them have a good pitch. But the point is, actually, I think he's probably actually been the best Marines pitcher this year, easily. So I don't see him as – so it's sort of like if you're pointing at the best guy and you're saying he's a problem, that's misplaced. I mean, I think Wakui is a problem, because one days he comes out and he's unhittable, and the next day he's unpitchable.
Yeah, but you're saying their best guy, but in the whole scope of the Pacific League, he's not.
No, he's a better than average pitcher in the Pacific League, definitely. But well, this season, okay, he hasn't gotten better than average. He hasn't gotten better
good.
Than average results, but that's performance. That's
right.
Performance data. That's not the same thing as being good.
Right. I see your point, and I mean. My point is that he's not getting the results because I don't think he, like I said, he's not putting the ball in the spots where he needs to, whenever it is, whether it's when he's
as
jammed,
I think it's
when,
as often, and I think it's probably more often in jams. These are things that he may or may not be able to learn, but I think he has. I think he's in general he's been actually pretty effective. He's had bad result. He's had bad. I think some of it is probably just misfortune, and sometimes it's bad control, you know, mislocation, bad decisions or whatever. But I don't think he's that far off. I like Daiki Iwashita. Ayumu Ishikawa is becoming the next Hideaki Wakui. He's either really good or he's really bad. But I like those three. Those three, Ishikawa and Iwashita and Futaki, they're not terrible. They're not like it's not like they're so bad that the Yakult Swallows are eager to sign them in the off season or something.
Hashtag high.
Yeah, and I think as I was tweeting with Coaster Freak tonight, bullpens have lost some games, and it's not the games that you see the obvious blown saves. It's the ones in the sixth or seventh or even the eighth innings that kind of get lost sometimes, like a one-run game, and pitchers just give up either the tying run and there goes a win, or the score is tied and they end up you end up losing the game. And those are the ones that hurt just as much. It's just that they kind of get brushed aside because it's not as dramatic as a ninth inning blown save. And so whatever it is, they just, you know, it has been a pitching issue, I think, in Chiba this season. But I think the future is bright, as you said. These guys are all young, and I think they're really going to be good next year on the mound since they've got all this this experience this year. I think they're going to be fantastic. Hint, hint.
Well, overall, the Marines, I just run this since I'm looking at it. The Marines' relief ERA is better than average. Okay. It's not, basically the competitors in the Pacific League are the Hawks and the Eagles, and
okay,
they're both a little better. And okay, well, let's look at the late relief.
Yeah, it's not always, you know, that you give up runs. It's when you give up runs. And like I said, a lot of times you might only give up the one run in three relief innings. But if the score is tied and you end up losing the game because you don't score anymore, then you walk away with a loss.
Well,
and I think that's what's
they're,
happening.
They're late relief.
Not that they're losing a lot of one.
Well, it's games. They're eighth and ninth.
They can be bad.
Their eighth and ninth innings have been bad. The guys in the eighth or ninth inning have been, yeah, pretty bad.
And that's where they're losing games. And that, I mean, that's what I've seen.
Okay, well, I'm just looking at the numbers for the whole season. And
right, right. But, I mean, look, you look at Leonis Martin, and that pickup has been great. And
yep.
I remember a couple, three shows back, you were about to say some really great things about him. And, you know, he made a really great throw home to the plate to nail a runner against SoftBank mm-hmm. on, I think it was Friday night.
It was
night,
Friday night.
Practically saved that game for them. And
well, it prevented the tying run from scoring,
right?
And that was important. They did, I mean, they eventually scored more runs later in the game, but yeah, it was a 1-0 game, and it prevented the tying run from scoring. And they, and Kodai Senga was on the mound for the Hawks, so lots of good things. He made a good play. They didn't save a run because it was a catch in foul territory, but it was a great catch. I mean, he's an outstanding outfielder. I was surprised that he only has 3 outfield assists this year, because it seems every time I'm looking up that he's throwing somebody out at the plate. I guess
he's only been here a month.
I know.
Give the dude time.
Yeah,
he'll
three
get some
three
more.
And 26 games. Okay, well Yuki Nagita had 3-9 games at the beginning of the season. So I got, you know, that's a tough competition.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, if you didn't know before, now you know. So people are not going to try maybe running on him, so it'd be harder to get some of the assists. But yeah, he looks terrific out there. So I think they really, you know, if he can hit a little bit, especially with some power.
Well, he's been hitting for power.
Year looks
but
consistently
he's been
next
power.
Year. But I keep pointing to next year. You're saying that you like what they can do this year. We talked about it last week. Nobody's really out of this thing. So let's make a two-seam transition and talk about the rest of the Pacific League. Now, the Hawks are on the verge of seeing their magic. And in Japan, the magic numbers are magical because they appear and disappear and hide and play games. And, you know, and you're picking up a newspaper and you say the magic number disappears and you're watching the game and there it appears in the bottom of the screen or the top of the screen somewhere. So it really is magical. The Hawks are on the verge of theirs and they're getting healthier, but I still think we could see them have either hit a bump in the road here, have another injury. I think Alfredo Despaigne had to be deactivated again recently because of an injury. So just because these guys come back from injury doesn't mean they're going to stay the rest of the season. There's no guarantee, you know, especially because we're talking about some older players. So
there's a guy who you can tell he's had a history.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you get our age, if you don't have a history when you're our age, you're probably dead.
# Hi.
You are history.
Exactly.
Yeah, I said my philosophy is you don't ever you don't get over injuries. You just collect them like a little girl picking daisies in the garden, you know, and you figure out how to manage them. You never fully get rid of what happens to you. So you don't ever heal. So anyway, the Hawks, I like the way they look. They've been playing, I wouldn't say consistent, mm-hmm. but they've been doing enough to keep that lead. You know, they built that lead back up because it had gotten down to a precarious number. I don't remember exactly what the number was, a couple of games, maybe 1.5 games, but they built it back up recently. But I do see a run somewhere. I don't know where it's going to come from, but I could see another team getting hot. The Eagles look good or great one day, and then they look mediocre the next.
Mm.
But they look really good when Takahiro Norimoto pitches really well. He pitched well on Wednesday at Zozo.
I didn't see the game. I saw the results, and so I didn't know what to think of it.
Yeah, he pitched really well.
Did he? It wasn't a typical Nori. I mean, it wasn't like a typical Norimoto pitching line. I think what, 3 strikeouts in 8 innings or something, and I'm going, that's not normal.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't Mr. I'm missing bats and I'm controlling the strike zone and I'm going to get you to swing through this.
Oh, he decided to be somebody different. You know, I like that. Pitchers do that sometimes. You know, it's like the time I went to a Swallows game and Masanori Ishikawa threw a one-hitter, and basically he was throwing high fastballs to everybody, and nobody, they're going, oh, that's not, you know, that he didn't just throw that pitch for a strike. Because nobody could, you know, it was like lost in space, does not compute. You know, right, I mean, they came back through the dugout swinging their heads. That's not really him out there. Because he didn't just throw that pitch and strike me out with that high fastball. They were sitting on low screwballs and stuff. So anyway, so people, pitchers do that. I love it when they do it. They go, they sort of change the book. And it can be really effective. And it's just a digression upon a digression. I think it's effective because Japanese hitters train. They really study the books, and the coaches really pound the books on what to expect from pitchers. And when the pitchers like completely change, you know, it's probably because other pitchers were working in the bullpen. I'm sure that day it wasn't that Ishikawa said, well, I'm going to ditch the screwball and, you know, and the slider and just pretty much go with high fastballs and curveballs and such. It was more like he really liked it in the bullpen and it worked in the first inning. So he says, well, you know, why not?
I gotcha. So, Norimoto, he threw 6 2/3 innings. He struck out 5. He had 1 walk. He gave up a run on 3 hits. So he was okay. But, certainly the bullpen had to come out and work pretty hard to get those final outs. And they, you know, the guys did a good job and they won. But again, I would say erratic for the Eagles. You know, they look really good one night and then the next not so good. And then they give up a bunch of runs and, they've lost these first two games of this series out in Tokorozawa against the Lions. And they've given up a bunch of runs again, but they came back today, and they actually made a run at them after falling behind early on Friday as well, but fell short, you know, and that's unfortunate for a team that had such a great start. So I'd hate to see them drop out of playoff contention, but you know, I had them finishing out of the playoffs, so I'd be right.
Well, that's all that matters. In fact, I think...
I told you, I make my list and I root for me.
As you should, and as do I.
But, I would like to see them finish in the playoffs. They're a young team. I'd like to see some of those guys get some playoff experience and then come back next year. But,
I mentioned earlier in the season, or maybe it was even in the preseason, I think I did it after they had their winning streak early in the season, that the Eagles are an odd year team. And so I think, you know, most teams say wait till next year, and the Rockton Eagles is wait, give us 2 more years. Yeah,
2 more years. But then there's the curious case of the Oryx Buffaloes. Now, they're leading the PL. I heard this on the radio the other day when I was listening to their broadcast, and they're leading the PL in team batting average in August.
Who cares?
Yeah, they're.
I'm sorry. Who cares?
Well, I mean, they're hitting well.
They had a higher batting average. The two things are not identical. They're singles or something.
Well, they're hitting the ball well, whatever it means.
Okay.
It was just a stat. You're right. Who cares? It was just a little stat.
Yeah.
But they're only 12-8 this month after losing today on Saturday. So, and I know it feels like a lot more. They've been winning a lot more, but they're barely over 500 for the month. And it's just like a pitcher. The reason they have looked so good is because they bunched their hits together.
Yes.
They had a series, I think, against Cebu, where they won 2 out of 3, and then they swept Nippon Ham, and then they swept Lotte. But other than that, you know, they had, a skid in there of at least 4 games, and they've just been up and down. But, I mean, 12-8 is a good month for that team, and for a last-place team, I think, as we talked about last week, these guys are pretty dangerous, and you can still count them in in terms of having a chance to get a playoff spot. So
I think that they've
fun to watch.
I think they've required a little settling in and sorting out. And I'm not as much as I am a big fan of Norifumi Nishimura, the man and the person to talk to. I'm not a big fan of his managing. I don't really think it's his managing is his strong suit. But the Oryx Buffaloes are at this speaking, they are 2.5 games out of the last playoff spot.
Wow. So yeah, that's not far.
They're not, obviously, I think your evaluation of the offense is absolutely correct. They need a lot of luck to score runs. They, if they're hitting for average, good for them, because they're going to have games where they get 12 hits and none of them with the runner on third and ready to score. And they hit, they hit a solo home run and they lose 4-1. But the difference is that right now, Stefan Romero's hitting well, Steven Moya's hitting well, Masataka Yoshida is, as usual, is hitting well. And as long as Shuhei Fukuda is at the top of the lineup getting on base, nobody cares whether he's going to, he's going to hit for extra bases. That's basically been the formula, and it's been working. The rest of the lineup is pretty weak. But having said that, those are four guys. That's an offense like a lot of their competitors. I mean, that's a better offense. Really, that's a better offense than the Nippon Ham Fighters have. So of course they're in fifth place. So maybe that's not the secret to success. But it's not bad right now. It appears. I think the reference to their batting average in August is about as red a herring as one can find. But
I'm just saying that they're hitting well.
Right.
Repeating what
I know.
I know. Said, which is, I mean, it's a nice stat for them. Leave them alone, for goodness.
Oh, I don't mean bad. I mean, I do pick on the media mercilessly, but I also understand they're just filling airtime with useless junk. I mean, and I say that not to be mean spirited, but the fact is they've got to fill airtime. And
all right, well, we've got to move to the Central League.
So in other words, I should stop filling airtime and let John get on with business.
There we go. So let's move to the Central League. Make a seamless transition. As seamless as
seamless,
that was.
Seamless, yeah, like seamless with bare knuckles. Okay, with a knuckle duster.
Okay, all right, stop interrupting.
Hashtag high heat.
Bam!
That is telling you to stop breathing. The Giants secured their magic number of 20 tonight with an extra inning victory over the Bay Stars. I think it was 7-6 in the 11th inning, and Shingo Ishikawa got a walk-off home run and a three-run shot. So that really stung probably for the Bay Stars, but the name of the game is win the series. So if they come back on Sunday and win the series, I think they can walk away with saying, hey, we did well in the series. And that's all you can try to do.
As long as we're talking about magic numbers, I just, the one, of course, my one quip about the media saying in the Giants game, well, if the Giants tie, they'll have a magic number of 21. And if they beat the Bay Stars, come back and beat the Bay Stars, they'll have a magic number in 20. So this is a crucial game.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I was thinking, wow. Okay, you go. Yeah. You go, guys. Anyway, moving on.
Actually, yeah, it'd be nice in September when these teams go head-to-head and the announcers make these statements like, oh, this is the most important series of the season, which they said about 3 months ago when things were really tight and everybody was close.
Sure.
And it was, And so now they'll actually mean it.
Exactly. Next month, the things that come out of their mouth will sound less stupid than they do today. But, hip, hip, hooray.
And in some cases, it'll actually be accurate.
So. Yeah, well, we can always dream.
We can. So, yeah, that is an important series. I think every game, and I talked about the importance of these series and these games and you know, how, for example, the Hiroshima Carp can't afford to go to Nagoya Dome and lose that series. And so they lost the first game, but they had a really nice comeback after losing their 4-1 lead in the ninth inning today, and finished that game off in extra innings 5-4 and beat the Dragons. And that's important. They're, you know, the Carp, this is a really good team, and I'm ready to admit that maybe picking them to finish fourth was perhaps a little bit harsh. I won't say poor judgment, because everything's not done yet, but I thought they would fall from the top spot, and I think I'm going to get that part right. But I think pushing them down to fourth place, saying that they weren't going to make the playoffs, hey, look, everything, it's not done yet, so we'll watch it play out. But they've got to beat the Dragons in these kinds of series when they play teams that are down in the standings, and they can't. You know, they've been really good against the Giants, and they've been really mediocre to poor against the Dragons, especially at Nagoya Dome this season.
Yeah, so that's weird, because usually that's a killing field.
Well, usually it's the opposite, right? They in past years they had trouble until they won that first Central League title with this core group of guys. They seemed to struggle with the Giants, particularly at Tokyo Dome, but just anywhere. And then this year they've just beaten them around. And playing the Dragons, you would expect to do well. Now, I say this all the time. I said these guys are not machines, and it's really hard to win. But again, you've got to take care of teams like the Dragons. So they got that game today, even though they gave up the lead, and I thought that was really big for them. So that was good. And also, I look at Hanshin, and you know, they're barely staying relevant in the chase. They win just enough. It's, you know, I liken it to what small newspapers do to their staffs back in the States. If you work for a small newspaper, they pay you just enough money so you can survive, so you can come back to work tomorrow.
Yeah.
You don't have any money to save. You can't save any money. You can't do anything. You don't have any place. You can't go on vacation and enjoy anything because you don't make enough money. But you do have enough money to get to work the next day.
You have enough money to...
and function.
Exactly, to get to the store and realize you don't have enough money to buy what you want.
Want, yeah. That's Hanshin. I mean, yeah. They're staying relevant in the chase. You know, they sent
Younger Solarte.
Yeah, you say it worse than I do. They sent him to the farm.
You see my, but Jeffrey, see my hand? You can read between the lines.
But Jeffrey Marte has seemed to get a spark when Solarte joined the team, and he has been doing well. Not all-star level, but he's been pretty productive to help the Tigers stay in the chase. And I really like the way he's swinging. He's swinging a little bit differently. It seems like he knows. He's got the timing down now. He knows what to look for. He's seen a lot of these pitches now. He's just really, really comfortable in the batter's box, whereas before he looked a little bit tentative, and he was swinging, but it looked like he was feeling for the ball instead of confidently swinging at the ball. And I like the way, I like the cuts he's been taking recently. So these teams, you know, it's going to be fun. I don't think any series is critical at the moment.
No, I'm looking at these teams and I'm thinking, okay, Tigers, yeah, it's possible. Dragons,
yeah.
Dragons, Swallows, no.
No.
But but Tigers are really only possible. I don't even give them 50-50 chance of finishing in the top three.
Again, 2.5 games behind or out of a playoff spot right now.
Yeah, but...
yeah, I don't see the Carp really falling back, but I don't see them moving up either. So I think they're going to stay in that two hole. And, you know, I think with that Toshiro Miyazaki injury with the Bay Stars, it hasn't seemed to kill them.
But hasn't yet.
Just enough to hamper them.
Yeah, it's been a small sample size still. You know, it's a small number of games with Yoshitomo Tsutsugo at third. But you know what? Having Yoshitomo Tsutsugo at third is a little bit like having Shohei Ohtani struggle in the spring, in that, or hit 235 as an 18-year-old rookie. It is not going to crush him if he makes a mistake at third base. It's not going to, you know what? So he's going to make mistakes. He's not going to get to balls. He's going to make maybe bad throws, although actually his arm is one of the more valuable things he has. He's going to make mistakes at third base, and you know what's going to happen at the plate? He's going to say, like, what? You mean I'm not in left field anymore? I forgot about that. It's like he ain't even going to notice it. So to me, this is a chance. Okay, they're going to lose a couple of runs between now and the rest of the season at third base. But on the other hand, let's say, let's say their outfield is more productive. The extra outfielder they put in the game is more productive than Miyazaki is, which is not a stretch. Miyazaki's a guy who basically hits 15 home, he hits 15 home runs and he hits 300 with an on-base percentage of about 310. Because he never walks.
Not getting walks.
Yeah. So, he has his advantages, but he's not a great player. He's a batting champion. He's an ideal batting champion. But I'm thinking there's a chance that they could be better off with Tsutsugo at third base and Miyazaki out of the lineup. They could bet off, that team could be better off because, that's a possibility.
I don't think I'm going to go there.
No, but I think it's a possibility.
I mean, it's possible. Because
he is in the position that's going to ruin Tsutsugo. You know, if you had a guy out there, it's not like, we had to promote Mishima to the closer spot and he starts freaking out, even though he's a decent pitcher. And he can't get any outs in the ninth. That's a disaster. But Tsutsugo, that's not something that's going to happen, I don't think. So anyway, moving along. So I like their chances of being in the mix. I like the Carp just because they're so gosh darn deep. They can match the Giants pretty much for depth.
And this kid Kaito Kozono wasn't supposed to be able to hit. I wouldn't say raking, but he's been hitting enough to make you forget Kosuke.
I mean, my biggest concern about the Carp is my biggest concern about the Giants. The fact is, whoever they put in the ninth inning, it's a little late in the game. It's a bit of a roll of the dice, especially when it's Shota Nakazaki, because he's the guy who's gonna load the bases about every third game. They come in a one-run game, load the bases, and get a save. Those are his good days.
Yeah. I'm with you. Just like the closers they had before. Let's move on. Making a two-seam transition. It's basically the time of the season for last-place teams to look at individual achievements.
Okay.
And really go hard after them. And I think no team exemplifies that better than the Yakult
Swallows. In other words, they got nothing else to talk about what except what individuals are doing. Yeah, fair enough.
Coco Valentin is going to be considered a Japanese player, so he won't count against the quota for foreign players next year. So that whether he's with the Swallows or some other team, they can add another foreign player. So that's good for him. And then you've got Tetsuto Yamada has stolen 33 consecutive bases over this season and last without being caught, and then 28 in a row this season without being caught. That's an NPB record. Both of them are. He's at 31 home runs, but he isn't likely to post his triple three season because he's hitting in the 280s. So that famous triple three, he's not going to be able to reach, but he's probably going to get 30 stolen bases, has the 30 home runs. Really an amazing player, and I think Twitter showed us this week that the fans are really anxiously awaiting for him to make the jump to the big league. So I honestly see him being like a better hitter in the major leagues than in MPB because of the notion of fastball counts and that he'd be able to wait and wait on or sit on those fastballs. But
maybe.
Yeah, I like what he has done. And then the second-year rookie, Munetaka Murakami, also of Yakult. And you stated on Twitter one day that my reference to him, his swing being baseball porn, and you called Tsuyoshi Wada's work on the mound, Tsuyoshi Wada of the SoftBank Hawks, his work was pitching porn. And I thought, okay, no.
Well, that was no.
It's nice to see Wada.
No. I was talking.
You were talking of a specific.
I was talking about his first inning back from injury when he struck out the side, and he was just merciless.
I still don't get.
Well, no. When you watch that, you know it's Wada. It's like it was a work of art. You know, and what happened was, if you remember that, if anyone remembers that game, basically he burned all his fuel in the first inning, and he kind of struggled after about the third. But he said,
Well, that's
because it was only the first
inning. Another pornographic reference that I'll stay away from. But
well, it was the first inning, and basically he said he thought about it, and he says, how can I make people put people's minds at ease that I'm actually back and fit enough to pitch? Blow him away in the first inning. So I thought that was fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, he gets the award for fun things in post-game hero interviews this month.
Yeah, I know you seem to. I still haven't gotten to see that, but because you mentioned it so much, his Friday night.
Indeed.
Antics on the podium there. I have to watch that, but I still think Murakami gets all the clicks when it comes to that. He's going to draw more clicks, so I'm going to go with him. But Murakami this week became just now. We were talking about this before we started, so I actually like what you said better first than the way the Japanese media is portraying.
Yeah, like, but he's got a record or something. Yeah, but he's got a record. I don't know what's the
Well, let me get to it.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. You weren't shouting for a second, so I stepped in. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, for a second. Okay, yes. So he hit his 30th home run this past week, or whenever you're listening, but this past week. And that made him part of a select group, let's word it this way, who were either rookies in their first year out of high school or second year out of high school to have at least 30 home runs. And the group is three. It's a trio with Murakami included, and features Toshi Nakanishi, who did it in 1953 with Nishitetsu, and Kazuhiro Kiyohara of Seibu, who did it in 1986. And but the way you phrased it was much better, because you said Kiyohara hit 31 home runs as a rookie straight out of high school, and that's the record.
Yeah.
So it's really not a record.
So it's not a record. No, that's one of those.
So why do they keep?
Because they like records. You know, it's like, I don't know what it was. Elias Sporting Bureau used to say something like, "He has more wins before June 12th than any other left-hander in the American League history." I'm going like, okay,
no,
well, that's June 12th, you know.
That's June 12th, yeah.
I know. What is it, like Armageddon or something? Something's happening on June 13th we don't know about. Okay.
It's the twisting of numbers.
Exactly. I know, it's
you
just,
use
just
words
ridiculous
to twist
stuff,
the
you know, and wearing, I'm sorry, that was for pitchers who wore glasses. Okay, got it. Okay.
Okay.
So, no. Yeah. So Murakami is...
Born
is,
between April and June.
Right. Basically, I look at it this way. Now, Toshinaka Nishi was over 20 when he was in that group, so I excluded him. I said, okay, how many players under 20 have hit, you know, home runs? And it's Kiyohara's hit 31 when he was a rookie. He was about 5 months older than Murakami was in his 18-year-old season, because Murakami's born in February and Kiyohara's born in July. But Kiyohara then hit 29 as a sophomore, so Murakami's past that. Murakami, however, now holds the record for RBIs by a player before his 20th birthday. With 85, he leads the Central League, so yeah, go for it. He should hit one more home run.
He's awesome.
Should hit two more home runs before the season's out, so Kiyohara will have to settle for the most home runs by a player before his age 19 season.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Murakami will hit a couple pop-ups that float out of either Yokohama or Jingu before the season ends. But, you know, looking at him again, revisiting that Rookie of the Year discussion we had earlier in the season, and I thought, you know, if he gets to 30 home runs, it really won't matter what Koji Chikamoto does with the Hanshin Tigers. And I think Chikamoto is the better all-around player. Obviously, Murakami with the glove. With the glove is just, you know, they can't hide him anywhere, and I don't want to see him throw the ball anywhere. I like I said, when there's two guys who, when they, at first base, when they start to throw the ball, I'm ducking, even if I'm watching on TV. and one of them is the Citizen in Nagoya. So I just, you know, he's not a great defensive player anywhere yet, but he's still young. He's going to have time to work on it.
Yeah, well, I'm in agreement with you. I think if I had to, as much as I'd love to see Murakami be Rookie of the Year, I wouldn't right now. I would vote for Chikumoto because he's got defense. He has definitely, he's not that far behind as a hitter. Because their numbers, Murakami's better, but he plays in a vastly better hitter's park, so you have to take a little shine off that, and then you compare.
And obviously, Chikumoto is a different kind of hitter as well.
He doesn't really do anything quite as well, but having said that, he's not just a center fielder, he's a good center fielder. I don't know about his range, to be honest, but he threw out Tetsu Yamada at
home plate the other day on a sack fly attempt.
That was one of those ones, I'm going, like, what were you, well, I know what you were thinking, well, this is a chance that if he makes a bad throw, but the game is tied.
Exactly, make him throw you.
Make a good throw, but he was out, you know, he was out by a mile, well, he wasn't out by a mile because Yamada's really fast, but it wasn't.
It was not a
high percentage play on his part, and Chikumoto gunned him down, which he does, and he's got a really good arm. And so far, it looks like a darn good center fielder for a young guy.
And steady.
I like him better. He's my Rookie of the Year right now.
I think.
But I agree with you. If Murakami hits 30 home runs, the tongues will flap out. And the brain cells will disengage.
And he automatically gets it, despite hitting 230, whatever he's hitting, and you know the RBIs are going to count for something. So I think he's going to end
up
hitting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People stop thinking; they see big numbers, and the brains disengage. So
it is true. It is true. And then one more fascinating number that has come up here, and I thought it was interesting here because I was surprised to see it, and that's Hotaka Yamakawa of the Cebu Lions. And he reached 100 RBIs last week, and he's the RBI leader in the Pacific League and the home run leader this year, probably going to lead both categories by the time the season is over. He's hitting 250 about as we speak tonight, so he's not going to get a triple crown, but he became just the third Cebu player to have at least 100 RBIs in two consecutive seasons, and he joins Takuya Nakamura and Alex Cabrera, and I was shocked to see that. I would have thought that, you know,
Akiyama or... Yeah, Koji Akiyama or Orestes Destrade or...
Destrade or somebody. But none of those guys was on the list. It was amazing.
Which leads us to a campaign for Takuya Nakamura's MVP candidacy.
Well, you know how I felt about that. I said it earlier this season. I thought he is, you know, I really like him better for the MVP award. I think he doesn't have the home run number, which is what the Japanese media looks at, but he has been steadier because we've seen Yamakawa go through a slump in which they removed him from the cleanup spot and dropped him down in the order a couple few slots, and again the average is pretty low, but he's still driving in runs. But the fact that he's hitting cleanup on a team that has a bunch of, I mean, you've got Fumikazu Kimura, he's been banging the ball. And if you're not going to be able to get guys like that out, you're in trouble with trying to get Cebu, you know, to get a clean inning or not get a four spot up or a five spot on the board, because these guys can really hit. So if you're not going to get guys like that out, you're really in trouble.
Mm.
So, but I really like what Nakamura is doing. I tell you, there's so many really good candidates in the real world.
Yeah, Japan, magic numbers are important, RBIs and pitching wins are MVP deciders world.
Right, right. Yeah, who's just the sexy numbers, who's got the home runs and RBIs, and that's our MVP if he plays for the first place team.
Pretty much.
You know, in the real world, I think these guys, Daichi Suzuki and Nakamura and Yamakawa and all these other guys would be actual MVP candidates. But in the MPB world, it's
who's your top candidate?
Doesn't deserve.
We're talking MVP. Who's your top candidate in the Central League? Do you have one offhand?
Offhand, I would say Hayato Sakamoto, but
yeah, I like him, or you know, flip a coin, Seiya Suzuki.
Seiya Suzuki's been really, I mean, he hit a ball today, actually. He ended up scoring, I think, in extra innings in the 10th, but he hit a ball today. In any other park in Japan, it would have been a home run, and it didn't carry out. It just got stuck on the top of that rubber pad out there in left center field. So anyway, we got to move along. Mm-hmm. We actually have more on the agenda than I think we're going to be able to fit in the show.
No worries.
So I want to skip one part. We'll talk about the outfielders chart that Jim did. And
I didn't publish the chart, actually. I just published some of the highlights because...
All right, publish some more of the highlights of the chart, and we'll have you guys look at that, and then we'll discuss it next week. But I did want to mention the fact in the notes that Shoga Akiyama of the Lions has earned his international free agency. He did that this past week, and I read an article that said he's considering... a move to the major leagues, as well as other teams in Japan, after this season. So, you know, he was the PL top batter in 2017. He's been the hits leader in the league 3 times. He's a best nine guy 3 times, a Golden Glover 5 times. He has a lot of accolades.
Accolades are a good word for Shogo Akiyama.
Yeah, especially with the Gold Gloves. But I think, you know, I look around at what center fielders do in the majors and how they look, and they don't look like a 32. He's 31 already. He turns 32 in April.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say we talked about the fact that he had been losing balls in the outfield. Now, he stopped doing that. He's been much better since, I would say.
Almost like, did he get new contacts or something?
He's got something, yeah. It's not like he got LASIK surgery,
yeah,
or
something.
Whatever it is.
And it's so, weird. It was weird how he was losing balls because they were like, he'd run to the spot
strange.
And then, oh, the ball's over here, okay. My glove's here and the ball's there.
And yeah, and he's hitting, you know, he's hitting home runs. He's kind of on a binge now, and I think he's trying to show. But I mean, I look around at what that position is in the center field, and nobody looks like him. And
well, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, I
can't imagine him being a center fielder at 32-year-old rookie in the big league. So. If they're going to move him to a corner position, well, that's where big league clubs like to put power hitters most of the time. Now, they don't always do that. And
well, or
I
offensively,
don't think he's a left fielder, but
he'll be helped out somewhat by his defense, competing with those guys. Because, I mean, it's not that the guy has to be a big power hitter, but the guy has to contribute more on offense. So, okay, well, he might have to contribute slightly less on offense because he'll contribute slightly more on defense. But having said that...
Yeah, but where?
Yeah, but what I'm talking about is a corner outfielder, but I'm saying that, okay...
But where? He's not going to play right.
Let me finish saying.
Okay, but I had a question.
Okay, but I was going to answer your question. I was answering your question before you asked it. The point is, does he have the offense to play as a corner outfielder, even given the fact that, let's say, okay, he's got to produce maybe 4 or 5 fewer runs than the competition, and I just don't see that. However, that being said, there are 30 teams, and not everybody has that kind of depth at the corner outfield position. I would think there are some teams to which he would be an addition. He could play regularly, but... That's a small market. I don't see that happening. And another reason I don't see it happening is less that he's a 32-year-old or 31-year-old or 33-year-old, but the fact is he's played in Japan, and I don't mean the Japanese baseball isn't good, but the big difficulty with Japanese baseball is that if you take a a hitter past the age of 25 who's not used to seeing pitches in the high 90s frequently,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a daily basis. And suddenly, pretty right. much, not, you know, half the pitchers are throwing sitting high 90s or touching high 90s. Okay. All the pitchers are now Shohei Ohtani and Edwin Escobar, or most of them. You know, that's a really tough okay. road to hoe when your reflexes, you know, your muscle memory learning ability is now in the 30s instead of, you know, 23 and 24 and 25. Your body just cannot create new cells fast enough to make that process. I don't know what the process is, but young players have a better track record adjusting than 30-year-olds. To me, one of the greatest achievements of a baseball player in the majors was Hideki Matsui hitting 30 home runs in the majors after he never saw major league pitching until he was 29 years old.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think he's big league quality, and I think it's similar to what we saw with Nobuhiro Matsuda of the Hawks when he experienced not getting the offers that were probably in
right.
line with his personal evaluation of what he deserved. And I think Akiyama will end up staying at MPB. I think this is more of a ploy than it is.
Ploy. That's cynical.
Well, I just don't.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I think he's going to go over. He's going to make the trips, but I don't think he's going to get the kind of
right.
So he
it's
wants,
so, but yes, ploy.
So,
ploy is such a cynical word.
So he's going to end up coming back.
It's such a cynical word, and I don't. Okay. I think that's an insult. I'm saying if you said the word that's a ploy, like it's a negotiating ploy to get a contract, that's very cynical. I think he wants to play in the major leagues. So I would say.
Well, wait a minute. Well, we don't have time to get into this because we're really.
But my point is this:
when Matsuda came back, you said, well, he didn't want to play because the offers were not.
He didn't want to play.
So which is
he didn't want to play. He wanted to play
well, then
only.
How do you know that
Matsuda wanted to play?
We haven't seen the offers yet.
Matsuda only wanted to play if he got an offer like Ben Zobrist. Okay, he wanted an offer that was over $10 million or something, $9 million. He wanted it like a major league offer, and he's going to get a camp invite. He didn't really want to play in the major leagues. He wanted to play in the major leagues if he got a certain kind of offer.
Okay.
Toritani was the same. He only wanted to play in the major.
What about Akiyama?
Akiyama wants to play in the major leagues. However, having said that, I don't know if he's going to want to play in the major leagues if it requires a camp invite. Now, that's a question, and I can't answer it. So is it a ploy if he wants a guaranteed contract? I think that's still cynical. But if he, you know, if I'm him and I want to play in the major leagues, I'll go on a spring camp invite. He would win a job because he might not win a starting job, but he'd win a job. He's a good player. He would be a quality fourth outfielder on pretty much on most major league teams.
Okay, fourth.
Yeah,
outfielder.
Exactly.
All right.
But my point is this. If he really wants to play, he'll go and give it a shot because he can always come back to Japan if he doesn't make it. It's no big deal.
All right. All right, well, what do you guys think? Anyone who has a comment about this or anything else you heard on the show, please hit us up at JBW Podcast on Twitter with the hashtag High Heat or without the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week, back on Sunday night, hopefully. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at jballallen.com.